Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Brad, I'm going to read a statement to start this show, and you can tell me who said this. After careful evaluation, we determined that making a change in leadership was in the best interest of the team. The last couple of months have been both disappointing and frustrating for all of us, and we did not perform up to our standards. We now turn our focus to identifying a new leader to guide us forward.
Was that Bob Quinn?
No, it's actually Donald Trump. No, I'm just kidding. It's Buster Posey.
I went way back to Bob Quinn there.
Bob Quinn. What about Al Rosen when we were
Al Rosen? Yeah, I wanted to do 93 to 96. Bob Quinn, those weird years. Everything was okay for a moment, and then it
wasn't. Yeah, so Buster Posey made his big move. He didn't waste any time. I kind of expected. I don't know what you were feeling going into the day, because so originally I had pitched to you. I was like, okay, day after the season's over, we know Buster's not happy with 81 and 81. Let's do a segment. And if you remember when he was in his heyday playing catcher, there was a meme on Twitter whenever he would throw somebody out at second base, and it would say, "Buster ain't having it."
Yes.
And so I was like, we'll do this segment. We'll talk about kind of the pieces of the team that aren't really Buster-like. You know, Ryan Walker, not Buster ain't having it, giving up all these save opportunities. And then he made the move today. So we had to kind of shelve that situation. But I woke up this morning thinking, I think Bob Melvin's going to be fired today. I don't know where you sat, but just after kind of the... It's not even really what he said. It's kind of what he didn't say of late that made me think about it, and to fall just short two games. They were two games back in the wild card race. And if they actually made it into the wild card race, you had a three game sprint against the Dodgers, who they haven't played well against in like 4 years. That would have been tough. But I just sensed it. I was like, I think he's going to get rid of them. Where did you end up before you saw the news?
You know, I was probably after the game yesterday, I think it was probably 70% sure he was gone. I also knew that if Buster was going to do it, he likes to be the first, right? Sign Willy Adames early. Buster doesn't mess around. We know that. If he's going to make a
decision for Devers before anybody else was making trades.
Exactly. If he's going to do something, he's going to do something. He's thought about it. It's not a quick trigger decision. It's something that's probably been festering and thought about for a while. I'm sure this has been thought about since, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks after he gave him the 1 year extension.
Yeah,
I think, you know, quickly after that, maybe a month after that, he was like, well, that little, you know, kick in the butt didn't work, so now I'm on to other things. But then, you know, they started fighting a little bit in early September, late August, early September. But yeah, I think going to bed last night, I think I was about 70% sure. And again, I knew if he was going to do it, it was going to happen this morning. It wasn't going to be something that was going to happen 2 days from now. I think Buster wants to start his search. He wants to have as many people to choose from as he can get. So being one of the first teams, along with the Twins, I think, are the other ones who fired Rocco Baldelli. There's another guy the Giants could bring in and interview. He just came off of, you know, it's a tough situation in Minnesota with the ownership there and everything, and you know, them changing hands and the sale and everything just basically going downhill. I think he's a guy that, you know, he's a player's manager. But yeah, and we'll get into that later of everybody who we think. But yeah, I don't think I was as surprised as I thought I was going to be about a week ago, if that makes sense.
We were all kind of wondering. In a week, but yeah. And so this is what I was wondering, which is they made the run. They actually were tied for the wild card at one point, and then they fell off again. And I wonder what would have happened if they would have actually, from that point on, they get hot and they stay hot, and maybe they even win the wild card by a few games. I wonder if Buster would have come to the same conclusion. It kind of sounds like he was thinking about this, and maybe even the winning streak that they were on. It's not saying that it wasn't a positive thing, but it would have kind of thrown a wrench in his plans a little bit. Because I believe what you said, which is he probably started thinking about this when Melvin could not get this team over that insane losing streak, including losing games at home where they were just not competitive.
Right.
And I started to think about it. It's what do you want out of a manager? Like we've been through now. So obviously Boach was the best that we've ever seen. And he's got the titles to show for it. And then you go to Gabe Kapler, who's kind of like this. He's a little bit of an arm of a very micromanaging head of baseball operations in Farhan. Like they have to be aligned in order for this thing to work. They are aligned in a way where you're like trying to align mega computers to compute out like the best possible scenarios here. Like they were so in line, and Farhan, I've heard him talk. So yeah, you know, we didn't always agree. Like we had some, you know, some discussion and debate on things, but it did seem like it's kind of like this Dodgers and Dave Roberts scenario where Dave Roberts is there to get the blame on stuff, really. And
yeah,
you know, he's a good spokesperson. He's a ex-player. He understands his role. He can talk to players. But really, like, he doesn't really do anything without, having this partnership with the organization. And so in that sense, you're like, okay, we're following this model that works. And so you have Gabe Kapler and Farhan. And then we were dealing with stuff like, you know, the Giants are bunting while they're up like 8 runs and we're trying to justify it, even though we know that when we were playing in high school, if we did that, we would expect to get drilled in the back and all of those things. And so when the Gabe Kapler scenario expires, you go, oh, let's bring back an old school guy. Let's bring back the old catcher who's been around baseball since the 80s. And, you know, it's easy to fall back on that plan. And I actually liked the idea. It's who we actually were talking about who would be the best candidate. But what happened, at least for me in this season, is we started to notice, and I hate saying this, but like literally at the All-Star break, I was like, my biggest fear is them going right back to 500 and being 81-81 at the end of the season. That's exactly the record. But it was almost like you have this opportunity and you didn't have the manager to push the gas pedal down and go, okay, guys, like let's go on a run and win this whole thing. And on the flip side, when they went on the losing streak, you didn't have the guy who was like, F this, guys. You know, we can't have this. Like, this is ridiculous. We're way better. Look at all the money that we put into this team. We cannot be playing like this. And Bob, it seemed, now we were not in those dugouts, but just his public persona seems like he just sat in the middle of like, everything will take care of itself. We just have to be smart. And so I don't know what levers there were to pull for him. And I don't know what levers you can pull with grown men in playing professional sports these days, but it does seem like there should have been something that he could have done to inspire a better play when they needed it most, which might be luck. It might also be what makes managers great at their job. That's the piece that I don't know, but I don't sense that Bob had that piece this year.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. It's, you know, the front office giving you those parts to get cohesive and be that team that can get over the hump, that can fight when the chips are down and, get some big wins. And it's a little bit on the manager side too. What kind of vibe is there in the clubhouse? Everybody talks so highly of him. And so it doesn't sound like it was a Pusoy in the clubhouse situation, right? I mean, it doesn't sound like the end of the Kapler years, so he still had the clubhouse, but it was just a matter of, and I think this message from Buster is basically, look, I gave you the pieces that I thought we could get into the playoffs this year. It didn't happen. You got to go. Now, because if he thought, hey, I still have more to add to this roster, which they always do, right? But if he thinks he's far off and still another 2 or 3 years away, Bob Melvin is here next year. But I think the situation is that Buster probably felt like we have the pieces right now to get into the playoffs. I gave you Devers. I took pieces away at the trade deadline, but that's because it was after a 6-game losing streak to the Mets and the Pirates at home. So his hand was forced. He had to do it. So I think it's just basically saying, I gave you the pieces. We should have gotten in the playoffs. It didn't happen. We need to go another direction. Which is sad to see. You know, we love Bob Melvin, and you know, he's a giant going back. I've got Bob Melvin's autograph. I mean, gosh, when I was 13 years old, ran down the railing and I got his and Bob Brenly. They were both on the team together. The Bobs, the catchers were there. I brought my cards with me. I got both of their autographs. me and Bob Melvin go way back. But what I think I'm looking for, because you asked this question and I'm taking forever to get there, but what I think I would like to see as a manager going forward for the Giants is, you know, and we talked about this before we got Bob Melvin, is a mix. You got to have analytics. You cannot turn your back to analytics. It is here. It's 2025. It's the year of that. As we've seen, the 1 year that the Giants went to the playoffs since, 2016, so 2017 and on, the 1 year they went to the playoffs, it was fully analytics with Gabe Kapler and his crew, and they won 107 ball games.
And they hit so many home runs.
They hit so many home runs, but to the fault also of the next couple years, it didn't work, because if you had a guy who was hitting 2 home runs in a game, but then he sat the next game because he was a lefty on lefty. And wasn't in the starting lineup, even though he was feeling himself with 2 home runs the night before, he didn't play. And I think that started to kind of rub the team the wrong way, and that became a problem. So there needs to be, and it's got to be somebody young. It has to be somebody young, because Buster Posey, this is going to be his forever manager, right? He wants a forever manager. He wants a 10-year manager that's going to get him to the playoffs, 7 out of the 10 years at least, and possibly win a championship. And so that's what Buster wants to hire. It's not going to be Bruce Bochy. It's not going to be Dusty Baker. Those names are out there, but those guys are in their 70s.
Hey, bring them both in. Just hang out.
Bring them both in. Yeah, but Bochy as a manager and Dusty Baker as the bench coach.
Put them in. Just like pay them to come to the park and hang out and just be there. Bring their good juju, and just kind of sit on the throne. Sit on the throne while this young manager, can utilize you for some help. That would be
and
hilarious.
Drink their good wine, man. Exactly. Just sit and drink their good wine in the stands. But it's not going to be either one of those guys. You need a young guy. You need somebody who's going to build with Buster Posey the same philosophy going forward, on the same page with the front office, where they can do some damage for the next 10 years. And that's who we're going to see. We're not going to see Bochy or Dusty Baker back.
So I looked up ESPN. Who wrote this? I don't even know who wrote this. It just says ESPN. So who knows who wrote this thing? So they have a list.
That's
of
AI.
I was looking for the name of Jeff Passan, but that is not the name that is on this. There's no name, actually. So top potential candidates. The associate manager of the Guardians, Craig Albernaz, is on the list. And like you said, Dusty and Bochy are on this list. Ryan Flaherty, who's a Chicago Cubs bench coach and former player. Yeah. Buster's homie, Mark Halberg, who was the Giants' first base coach. Nick Hundley, who it seems like, you'd have to pull him out of his current job with the Texas Rangers as a special assistant to the general manager. So he would have some understanding of the things that Buster and Zach would be dealing with based on, I'm assuming, his kind of mentorship there. And then Skip Shoemaker, who it sounds like is who the Rangers would want to follow Bochy.
Yeah.
And then Tony Vitello, who is currently the head baseball coach of the University of Tennessee and won the College World Series. So that's what ESPN says. Have you heard of any other names that strike your interest?
You know, I haven't heard. I mean, Mark DeRosa is another one that was thrown out there, former Giant. I mean, he wasn't like big time former Giant, but he is a former Giant. And he managed the USA team in the World Baseball Classic. That's another name that I've seen out there. I don't know how I would feel about that one. I love D-Ro. I think he's awesome on MLB Network. I think he did a good job with the USA team. But, you know, what kind of experience is there? That's the hard part. So I guess I've also thrown my hat in the ring to say I also want somebody with experience, not just somebody young, but with experience, which is a little bit harder to find. But Hallberg has some experience in the major league clubhouse day in and day out working with Bob Melvin. Albernez has experience. You know, he's in Cleveland right now. He's bench coach. So he's got some experience in the clubhouse, in the dugout. I think that's what I'm looking for, not just a former player. Nick Hundley, that's the name you threw out there also. I've seen that name. That would be an interesting choice. He's worked with Buster, you know, but Buster and him were, you know, basically on the same roster, catcher and backup catcher. Hundley's a guy who I think last or 2 years ago when the Giants were doing their search, he declined because he was, you know, just freshly out of baseball. But word is that he's going to end up somewhere with somebody at some point being a coach. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, out of all of them, I think Albernez is probably the most intriguing. Hallberg would be a great pick. I think those two guys are probably the front runners, I would say. But you never know. I mean, this search is starting the day after the season ended.
Yep.
So there's going to be a lot of names that are floating around out there.
So Rob, who's hanging out in the chat, shout out to Rob. Also shout out to Davis, a.k.a. Drip, who's in the chat as well. Rob's list includes Hundley, Ned Yost. Didn't we beat him in the World Series?
Yeah, we did. Poor Ned Yost. I've got some old Milwaukee Brewer Ned Yost cards exactly. From back in the day, too.
Mike Matheny, Ron Wotus, who's old school Giants, and Grady Sizemore. Grady Sizemore. I got some Grady Sizemore cards in MLB The Show.
There you go.
And so that's his list. I wanted to put that out there. You know, the interesting thing that you said about 5 minutes ago was about how Buster is looking for someone that he can partner with for a long time. And it's such a crazy thing. And this kind of pairs back to who he wanted to be the GM, right?
Mm-hmm.
And does somebody who you know and has worked with you and has worked on your staff before, does that person have the inside to that job versus somebody that you don't know just because you're like, oh, we have this thing. I you know, and I'm specifically thinking about Hallberg because they do know each other and they are friends. And at some point, I'm sure Buster has probably told him, you know, you'd probably be a really good manager. Like, yeah. You know, and so now he would have the opportunity to make that reality if it fit the way that that they would want it to. But I was thinking about that because how do you create the opportunity for this long-term pairing based off of a resume and based off of a job interview and based off of a conversation about baseball? Because it's not like you can take a month to make this decision. They're going to have to make this decision several days after meeting people. And it's really like, who, you know, it's like anybody who's been in a job interview. Some of it is like, oh, for whatever reason, on this day, at this point, we aligned, or this person was really charming at this point. But at least with Hallberg and anybody in the Giants organization or anybody who Buster played with or even played against, I do wonder if that favors people you are familiar with for this kind of role. Because it's not like Now, the flip side would be if Buster thought that the Giants had the best roster in baseball and it was the coach's fault as for them not, manager's fault for them not winning the World Series, like Phil Jackson getting brought in to coach the Lakers. Like, he's a hired gun for one reason. He wasn't hired with the Lakers to be there forever. He was hired with the Lakers to straighten out a situation where they had a talented roster and they had guys who were not on the same page. And he's the guru at that. So that's not what this is. This is Buster's hire to put his imprint on this baseball club. And like you said, the goal is probably to be here for a little while and to be a partner with and to win, you know, some playoff games. And that is a different discussion, which is why I wonder if someone like Halberg has a little bit of the inside track.
You know, I assume they do, because whoever is getting hired is there to be on the same page as Buster Posey and implement Buster Posey's vision of what championship teams should be. He's played on championship teams, and again, you can't run it back. You can't go get Bochy and then because if you're going to do that, you might as well, Buster, you might as well suit up and get behind the dish again. Because I mean, if you're trying to run it back to like the glory days and all of that, that's just not going to work. By the way, Ned Yost is 70. So I don't.
Yeah. It's what I was thinking about with Yost, because I think Yost and maybe Bochy, maybe not Dusty, because I think Dusty. Is Dusty older than those guys?
I think Dusty's 76.
Yeah, Dusty's older. Yeah, so I think you would bring in, and this is, you know, we had this conversation, and I made my play for Boch as a, you know. Buster brings him in because he knows him. It's a 2-year deal with the idea that you also hire somebody underneath Bochy to eventually take over, and they just kind of they're on that. They just gain the Bochiness by being around him. That's more fairy tale than anything else. But what you're saying, and this is, you know, I get why Rob wants Yost, because, you know, this is what Buster wants, and he wants pitching and defense and base running and all of those things, right?
Yeah.
But can you bring somebody in who has been around for that long and invest the same amount of time? Maybe Ned Yost wins a World Series and he's like, all right, guys, I'm done. And then you got to do this all over again, right? So that is one reason why they may lean younger like you. But if you were the Dodgers, like let's say you're the Dodgers, and like let's say they get smoked by the Reds, which would be the most embarrassing thing. And we'll talk about the playoffs here in a second, the wild card round. And the Guggenheim people are just like, you know what? Dave Roberts is the problem. Let's bring in a Yoda so that we just win the next three titles. Like that's where you would bring in somebody who's got this like amazing pedigree like a Bochy or whatever. I don't think you do that in the Giants scenario, but look, man, you know, this team could utilize a type of pedigree that you would hope to build on, which is why I like Bochy. But just this atmosphere, right? Gold-blooded, you know, all of the idea that these teams never say die. You know, these last 2 years, you know what the Giants were really good at? Dying. They're really good at dying. They had some good come from behind wins this year, especially, and I thought they played well in close games. But you know what also would happen? They just get their asses blown out, and it felt like they couldn't get a hit. So whatever that is, I think Buster is a part of creating that for whatever this team becomes, and that's not an easy job, because you can put. I think Buster means a lot to us because of who he was as a player, and we know his personality and what how relentless he's going to be, and how when he was a rookie, he kind of became like one of the team leaders as a rookie. Like all of those things are good things. So now what does that show up as for the team and what kind of team they're going to be?
Yeah. And it's interesting too, just to throw ages out there as well. Albernez is going to be 43 next month, And in December, Hallberg is going to be 40. So you're looking at a couple of guys that could be around, you know, if they come out of the gates hot with the Giants, they could be manager for the Giants for 10 plus years. And I think that's what Buster wants, stability too. You know, he doesn't want the 2 year manager, the 3 year manager.
Yeah.
Win a championship.
We've had like enough of that.
Yeah. Start over again. I mean, here we are. He doesn't want to do this again. This will be his first managerial hire, and he doesn't want it to be, you know, just a quick one and done. I mean, he's learning on the job. He's making mistakes. Can you call upping Bob Melvin and picking up his option for 1 year a mistake? I mean, you can.
But did you see his explanation on why he did it?
I did. And I think we pretty much knew that when it happened too. It was a kick in the pants. Can we get this team going? And I get that, because the team was struggling and you wanted to show them, we don't have a lame duck manager anymore. Mm-hmm. Now we have a guy who's going to be here this year and next year. Now it's time for everybody to show accountability.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. And again, is it, you know, it's the manager's job to put players in positions, whether it be, you know, with the information they're given before the game, scouting reports and everything else, to positions on the field, to positions in the batting order. It's up to the manager to put them in positions to best use their strengths and to minimize their weaknesses. So I think Buster feels like he's got a lineup where a manager can come in and do that, and just Bob Melvin wasn't it. And so that's why I don't necessarily feel like that was a mistake to up him in the middle of the season. I get it. From a money standpoint, yeah, it hurts the organization a little bit. But again, that little bit of money in the grand scheme of things, especially with your attendance shooting up and they want to ride that wave as well. There's a lot of things that went into this decision, but I completely agree with it. I think most Giants fans wanted him gone anyways. I don't think I haven't found too many who are like, darn it, I wanted to run this back again next year and do the same thing over again.
Rob is in the chat talking about Will Venable, and as the one who got away, and his dad played for the Giants. Good old Max Venable. That would have been interesting.
Will Venable is the one that got away. Stephen Vogt is the one that got away. I mean, you could go on and on and on, but yeah, it is what it is. So,
all right, well, this story is not going to be over, because the Giants will have to hire somebody, and we will discuss it when it happens, though you'll be out next week, so we won't have a show next week. So when we come back, we'll more than likely probably have some news, I'm going to expect, when you do come back.
If I'm on vacation and we get a hire, I'm going to, and you end up going on the air, I'm going to record some thoughts in a voice memo, and I'm going to send it to you. So,
all right,
I'll have some thoughts.
There you go. okay, so we did this thing at the beginning of the season where we made some predictions, and you have those predictions, and we're going to look at them. And I'm going to, cover my eyes, because I imagine some of them are going to be really bad, because we're always optimistic before the season starts. Yes. And so why don't you talk about the ones that we made and how we did?
Yeah, well, this year we actually had a winner. I think last year we tied. I think we both got like three right last year. This year we had a winner. We still didn't do well. We didn't do fantastic. We were a game over 500, and the other one was a game under 500. So that's we were the Giants.
Yeah.
So we did pick five predictions at the beginning of the year. This goes back to, I think, March. It was like a week before the season started. But the first couple are pretty amazing to me. So the over under that I picked, 87.5 wins on the season for the Giants. I went under, so I won that one. I picked 87. So I just came a game and or a half a game under. You picked 81. You picked under an 81. Well, that's kind of like two wins right there, right?
Yeah. My biggest fear of the season was finishing 500.
Well, your fear came true. You predicted it, and here we are. So we're tied 1-1 after that. The next one was kind of fun. Over under 65.5 starts combined for Verlander, Ray, and Hicks. And the reason I threw that out there is because the year before they only made 44 starts together.
Yeah.
You know, Hicks had 20. It was his first year as a starter. Verlander had 17 coming off of injury. And Robbie Ray had 7 coming off of Tommy John.
Right.
So the over-under is set at 65.5. Well, the three of them started 70 games, exactly.
As Giants.
As Giants. Robbie Ray, 32. Verlander, 29. And Hicks had 9 starts with the Giants. I said over, and I went with 68. So it was real close.
Mm-hmm.
You said over, and you went with 70. So
wow.
2 in a row, you nailed it. Right on the dot. So even though you're up, or we're tied 2-2, I'm giving you the edge because you nailed both of those.
I've not even made $2 on a lotto ticket in years and years. So
you need to swing up to Reno and hit the slot machines. I think that's what you got to do now. This one's ugly. This one's cover your ears and your eyes on this one.
Oh man,
over under 30.5 saves for Ryan Walker.
Woo!
30.5 saves for Ryan Walker. Zips had him at 28. So mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to give a little bit of boost, 30.5. We both took the over. I took 33. You took 32. He had 17. We did not win either of those.
You know, part of my calculus was I was reading Eno Saris's article about him before the season started, which was here are sort of unconventional guys that you don't really think about, but who may come through as guys you're going to remember at the end of the season. And, you know, he's a very smart guy, but he's not writing it as, you know, fact. He's like saying, hey, here's a heads up on someone you may have not heard of. So I was like, you know what? If he's thinking about Walker, maybe Walker's season last year wasn't just, you know, it's not saying it was luck. He was a pretty good pitcher for a lot of last year.
He looked really, really good last year.
There were moments where all of a sudden he would just lose everything and like not like because he throws from such an incredible angle. He can throw hard from that angle, and then you drop in a slider from that angle and it almost looks unhittable. Like what I was talking about MLB The Show. I love pitching with him in MLB The Show because you can just drop sliders just on the outside lower corner of the plate all day long. And that's kind of what he was doing. But it does seem like, I don't know if some of it was mental fatigue. I don't know if there was anything physical going on, but it did seem like push comes to shove. The bigger the moment, the harder it was for him. And then it just turned into this, like he became like Tanner Scott at the end of the season for whatever reason. And they couldn't even trust him. And, you know, this is what is so hard about that job that he has. I'm not going to, I don't compare closers to NFL kickers because I think NFL kickers, if you wanted to change the game slightly, you just say, we don't really need these guys. We just force people to go for touchdowns, but they are similar in the way that the only way you really know who they are is when they screw up. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Walker, like, nobody felt comfortable with him after like May when he was pitching in a tough situation because he just did not look like he was in control. And so I don't expect him to pitch a single important inning for the team next year. I can't imagine Buster watched him pitch and was like, you know what? I still got faith in that guy. Unless Buster himself was catching, then maybe Buster could figure it out. But I don't know, man. That was a really scary thing in the end where this dude, not only was he not able to shut teams down or even like show a semblance of it, but that the look on his face when he was in the game, I was just like, there's no way. This dude is not confident in any way.
I think that's where you nailed it. It's the look of fear at some point where it's like, uh-oh. I'm standing out here naked on the mound without my control, and I'm supposed to close out this ball game. Because I'm looking down the list of saves leaders on the season. Even Carlos Estevez had 42 saves for the Royals, right? He blew six saves.
Yeah.
Suarez for San Diego, 40 saves. He blew five. Andres Munoz, Seattle's heralded closer who's in the playoffs, 1.73 ERA, 38 saves. He blew seven saves.
That is so interesting because, like, I think we think of, like, as we're growing up, like, who the best relievers are, and you're like, oh, Eckersley. He barely ever blew a save. But I do think sometimes these closers are not asked to do a ton, and sometimes they're asked to do a little bit more because we were able to see whenever Doval would pitch, would have to stretch a little bit longer or maybe come in the eighth inning. He wasn't nearly as good as he was just having a clean start to the ninth. And so some of that is also part of it, which is the ability to have a clean start and then come in. And this was Walker's problem, is that he wasn't even great in those clean start innings. He would create these issues and like, you're like, dude, you can't blame this on anybody.
Yeah. And with the three batter rule, you're kind of stuck in that situation too. Where in the past you could say, I put you out there, he walked the first two guys, get him out of there. Now you got to pitch to the third guy. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So if you don't have it after those two guys and you still don't have it, and now you're like, well, I've got to come in or else I walk the bases loaded. Now you give up a double and one run, maybe two run score, and you're in trouble. So that three batter rule kind of plays into it a little bit as well. So I wonder if that's also why I do see, you know, closers come in and pitch the last out of the eighth inning. Well, now you've got free rein. Because if they go out there and they just don't have it in the first batter or two, you can take them out because now there's no three batter rule. You've switched innings, so you don't have to follow that rule. But
I wonder if there's like a pitch comm signal for pretend your arm hurts so we can get you out of the game.
Why did Ryan Walker's arm hurt 76 times this season? Well, he's got a bum arm, but he doesn't need to go on the IL. He's doing fine.
And look, I have no ill will towards Ryan Walker.
No, he's
a human being. He seems like a very nice guy, but it was so frustrating to watch him pitch on a team again. And we're not talking about a 60 win team. We're talking about an 81 win team where there were games there for them to get to 85, and that's a different story for a lot of different people if they get to 85.
Right, and Ryan Walker did also have seven blown saves, so he had as many blown saves as Andres Munoz, who closes for the Seattle Mariners with 38 saves. I mean, you obviously do the math, ratio, whatever it is. The more save opportunities Ryan Walker would have gotten, the more blown saves he might have gotten as well. It's a tough job, man. It really is a tough job. And we've seen it through the years. Even the Giants had three different closers in their World Series titles, and one of them was named Madison Bumgarner. So they were in a situation against the Kansas City Royals in 2014. They didn't really have a closer they could trust. So they're like, just Bumgarner's going as long as he can.
And speaking of Ned Yost, I think it was in Alex Pavlovich's book, and I don't know if you've gotten to the Bumgarner chapter yet, but I think he said something to the effect of, I think it was Yost. It was definitely somebody on their bench. But after Bumgarner won that game, they were like, oh my gosh, thankfully we don't have to see him again. And, then you know what happened after that.
Like, oops.
Yeah.
Or I guess we do. Yeah, I think I got to that part. I'm still like 56% through the book, but
yeah,
it's something I definitely got to finish. All right, back to it. Number three. That was number three, the saves for Ryan Walker. So we're still tied 2-2. Next, number four, over under 49.5 games played for Bryce Eldridge. He played in 10.
Yeah.
I went with the over at 54. You went with the under at 13. You were three off. You were right there. So again, right on it almost. Three for you, two for me. And then the last one.
This one has to do with stolen bases.
It always does. I'm always going to put, if we had five other things to choose from, I would make it six because I'd throw in stolen bases.
Rob in the chat was talking about managers' stolen base rates and stuff and how Melvin is like the lowest out of
people. We want stolen bases so badly.
I mean, Juan Soto can steal bags, right? Who was the other guy? Josh Naylor. He was like stealing 20 bags or something.
Yeah. And so the over under on this was 80.5. And I thought we're going to get there. You know, in 2021, we had 66. 2022, we had 64. 2023, we had 57. But then in 2024, we jumped up to 68. And I thought we can find 12, 13 more.
It was Fitzy. Yeah. And Jung-Hoo.
Yeah. So I said 80.5 is the over-under. I went over, you went over. I said 95, you said 85. We had the exact same we had in 2024. We had 68 stolen bases.
Yeah.
We did not improve. We did not get worse.
A lot of that was wishful thinking on our end because in our brains, part of the ecosystem of them being part of the plan for them to be a good team was to improve their base running. Yes. And it just became like they started out the season like that. And then at some point they stopped running completely. Like it was so weird.
Yeah.
And I think Melvin said something to the effect of like, well, we're not getting as many guys on. So thus we don't want to risk them creating outs, and when you're on base a little bit more, maybe you're less risk averse.
And that could be part of the firing too. I mean, maybe Buster wants somebody who's going to take some risks. If you don't have the opportunities, maybe you create the opportunities. Maybe you have your guys ready to do that. Maybe you go into this series against a team with good pitching and you say, look, guys, when we get the opportunity, we are going to take the extra bases. We are going to steal bases. If we get thrown out, we get thrown out. We're going to keep at it. That's a part of the thing is when you've got a team like the Giants, you can't be scared on the base paths, I think. And again, this is just me talking because I like to push stolen bases. I like to push, you know, get athletic guys, get guys on the base paths who can go from first to third. You know, that's what I want to see as a baseball fan, as a Giants fan. I want to see the running Giants.
All right. So the next topic is, you know, we were doing this thing where we were doing monthly player of the month, and we were doing, we were flip-flopping between pitcher and offense, and we were also doing like an unsung one as far as like who's kind of under the radar as the player of the month, who's not getting all the write-ups. And so now we're going to do it for the whole season. I think the pitcher one is pretty easy. I don't think you had to think too hard about yours, but I am interested to see who you chose for the unsung pitching MVP this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went with Logan Webb for pitcher of the year, pitcher MVP of the year. 15 wins that tied his career high from a couple years ago. Led the National League in innings pitched and strikeouts. We've heard that, you know, a million times yesterday, but it is not something to sneeze at. I mean, that is a huge feat. Last person to do that was Scherzer in 2018 for the Nationals. Last person to do that in the National League, that is. The first, and he's also the first Giant to do it since 1944. When you know this name, we all know this name, Bill Voisel. He did it in 1944.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the coaches that they're trying to hire as a manager.
Yeah,
he's gonna be 110 years old.
There you go. If you want an old guy, look for Bill Voisel. Second most innings pitched in his career. 3.22 ERA and a 2.60 FIP, which tells you he could have even been better. The ERA maybe had a couple more wins if the defense was a little bit better behind him and he had a little bit more offense behind him. But that's my obvious pitcher MVP of the year.
For the hitters, I don't think that there's an obvious one because everybody is a little flawed. I think, you know, it's not really just hitting. It's also everyday players.
Yes.
And I think you probably have to go Adames because 30 jacks, and 87 RBI, as well as 80 walks. Now, his walk rate is not, I don't think it's quite as good as Devers is, but they probably strike out about the same. But they both walk. They both get on base. You know, Devers only hit 236 with us, but he had a 347 on base because he walked. And Adames' on base is not as great, but it's because he only hit 225. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is for an everyday player, he played 160 games and he played shortstop. His defense, I think we were really worried about the defense earlier in the season. We're like, oh my gosh, did we just, you know, did they just sign a future third baseman? But it did pick up as the season went on. It was almost like as his hitting picked up, his defense also picked up. So again, it wasn't like a slam dunk, but he did hit 9 more home runs than the next highest guy. Though, you know, Devers did hit 20 in much less at bats. And if you kind of prorated it for him being here for a full season, it's very possible that he gets over 30 with the Giants. But I do think the everyday playing aspect, the playing shortstop aspect, you know, better than most, because I had problems with some of his swing decisions when the Giants just needed a base hit and he's like swinging for like a 500 foot home run did bother me. But that's kind of baseball today.
Yeah.
So that is not, it wasn't an easy one, not necessarily the best one. Like I could see somebody even saying Eliot Ramos as a hitter was more valuable than Willy Adames. But then you look at how he played left field and you're like, you talk about Logan Webb's FIP, like there's probably half of it right there is just Ramos, you know, dancing in left field, trying to field a ball because Ramos also played a lot. Ramos is the only player on the team who had more at bats than Adames.
Yeah.
So those guys were on the field all year. And also, you know, I think this was something that we worried about, which was Jung-Hoo Lee being able to see the field for the whole season. And Jung-Hoo Lee actually ended up hitting 266. Not great, but not kind of our worry, which is that he was just going to be like a 240 hitter and not be able to get on base. So not fantastic options there. I'm going to lean Adames just because he played 160 games and almost had 700 plate appearances.
Yeah. No, that's a good pick. I mean, nobody else was really a catalyst for this team. Yeah, he struggled in the first half, but nobody else really carried this team as much as he did. The second half of the season from that Colorado series in July on, I mean, that was just, you know, vintage Willy Adames. That's who we thought we would have. And next year, you know, he had 30 home runs. If he puts together a complete season, this guy could hit 40 home runs next year.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, now, obviously, this is all about staying healthy. Chapman, Ramos, Adames, Devers, all will hit 20 home runs next year. Ramos, right. We'll see. Ramos had 21. Chapman had 21. But Chapman also missed a lot of games. Staying healthy, playing 145, 150 games each, there's a good shot that they get four guys who can hit over 20.
Yeah.
And then you got this young kid with, you know, Bryce Eldridge who could come in and pop some. And so now from a power perspective, from a home runs perspective, next year's lineup looks a lot better than it did going into this season. And we'll see what they do with Ramos. I don't imagine that they will give up on him because he's a young player and they're under their control. But if there is a spot that if you could find an all-star type player to fit in left field, it is worth the conversation of possibly moving on from him. But you know, but just going into next season from a home run perspective, I think they're going to hit their fair share unless, you know, something happens and people get hurt.
Yeah, and Ramos went from being an all-star last year and a 2.3 WAR down to a 1.2 WAR this year. But he did play in 30 more games, played in 157 games.
Yeah.
I mean, 157
games. He hit leadoff for most of the games, too.
He did. And if you can get an outfielder, you know, hitting 256 with 20 home runs, and then he can improve on that and maybe be a 270, 275 hitter and pop, you know, 9 more home runs. And you've got enough. You're not going to replace that. That's hard to do. I know I said like a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, he could be shopped in the off season. That's also still a possibility because they have so many outfielders. If they want to get a starting pitcher, you know, like maybe a number 3, a number 4, that does have some control going forward, or the team who has a lot of pitching, you know, that's a possibility. I'm not going to leave that out of the realm of possibility. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. I would love to see him continue on and improve and improve and improve.
All right. Who's your unsung pitcher of the year?
So my unsung, I was leaning towards all weekend long. I was like, I think it's going to be Verlander. And I kept thinking, I thought that first half hurt so much. I don't know if I could give him unsung based on just his second half. Yeah, he meant a lot to the team, but I think there was one guy, starting pitcher, who meant more to the team in terms of unsung hero. And also, he's going to be around for a while, and that's Landon Roop. Yeah, I had to give it to him. He had 22 starts on the season. This is a guy who we were, you know, is he going to make the starting rotation coming out of spring? He fought his butt off in spring, won that job, got injured late in the season, but he did have 22 starts, 106 innings, which is just one inning off of the most he's ever had in the pros. That was 2022 in the minors. He had 107 innings. And an 8.61 K per nine, a 0.93 home runs per nine, a 3.80 ERA, 3.91 FIP. So we know who he is. He's just got to get his walks down. I think he was around 3.8 walks per nine. So that absolutely has to come down. He can probably get to around 150 innings next year, be a good number 4 or 5 starter, probably get you 27 to 30 starts possibly. So 5-6 more starts than he had this season. But the fact that he came out of the gates on fire and really helped this team, you know, off to the great start that they had, I had to give it to him. I looked at the relievers. You know, if Tyler Rogers was still here, he probably would have won it. I probably would have given it to him. I was excited to see what he could do in the playoffs with the Mets, but the Mets folded like a house of cards. So.
Eighth inning, Randy was an all-star.
He was. I was contemplating, but the problem with him is that he just, when he was given the closer role, and I know he had the arm injury, right? And that's another reason.
According to him, he's had the arm injury for a couple of years now, is pitching through it.
Yeah, so the fact that he had the arm injury and just wasn't himself, I know he gave us a lot. You know, I can give him the Purple Heart Award for going out there and giving us what he had with a hurt arm. But Landon Roop, what he did, I thought was pretty amazing. I think he was our best young pitcher on the staff. And minus the injury, I think he could have really closed out the season on a high note.
Well, he's the lesser of the three prospects with Harrison and Birdsong, and he's the one that outlasts all of them. Harrison gets traded, and we'll see if Birdsong ever finds his command again, and he's the one who's left standing, and so he's the one that you kind of pencil in next year. Like, okay, like he's going to probably be in the rotation as long as he's healthy, and he got through his first real season in the bigs, and you'd like to see, okay, how do you build upon that? You know, what is he going to look like next year? So yeah, that was really good to see. So my unsung, and this is there's not really anybody on the Giants list of like here are guys who, you know, maybe played a vital role coming off of the bench. Like Casey Schmidt hit 12 home runs coming off of the bench. Great.
Yeah.
He also only hit 237.
Right.
Christian Koss actually played as good of an impersonation of the type of players who really helped the Giants win playoff games in the past, mm-hmm. Coming in when they need him. Like if you know,
Mike Fontenot's of the world, the Ryan Terrios of the world. Yeah. You got to have those guys.
not saying that his stats, fly off the page, right? But they're much better than you would have imagined just watching the games, day in and day out. Unfortunately, some of the guys that, they may have been counting on, like Amatos, Drew Gilbert did not play very much, but, I think we were all in love with Drew Gilbert. And then he was like, hey, guys, I'm going to hit 190 for the rest of the season. Encarnacion just kept getting hurt. Who knows what his future is like? Brett Wisely, they let him, they waived him, and now he's on another team. So you kind of have to go back to the starters and go, you know what? This player probably had a better season than we're going to remember that he had. And I'm going to go with Matt Chapman because now this is not a perfect one because everyone's going to go, oh my gosh, this dude hit 231. And you're right. It's much easier, and I think it's a softer one that's a little bit more agreeable to say, well, what about Dom Smith? And you're like, yes, Dom Smith, really did play some good baseball for them, but he also only had 200 at-bats.
Yeah.
And so
he came in late.
He kind of did a pretty good Lamont Wade impersonation, right? Like he was actually a better version of Lamont Wade. But I'm going to lean Chapman, and it's mostly because of two things. There was a stat before he came back from injury, and I know that stat isn't as good as it was, but the Giants' record when he was in the lineup was pretty incredible based on when he wasn't in the lineup. And so that tells you how much of an effect he has on the field. And the second thing is, even though he only played in 128 games, he still hit 21 home runs. He only hit 231. And this is a baseball reference statistic, their version of WAR. He had the highest WAR on the team for everybody. And I know pitcher and batter WAR are not equal, but he had the highest WAR on the team in that time frame in 128 games. That is somewhat his defense, which he showcased all the way through until the end of the season. And he led the team in OPS. Like, that is something, because while he did strike out a fair amount, he also walks a fair amount as well. So I think there are things that maybe if you watched him every day, you go, okay, he's a good baseball player, but maybe he didn't have as good of a season. And I think some of those numbers say he may have had a slightly better season than we even realize. But you're always going to look at that 231 batting average. And I think that says enough to why he wasn't their offensive MVP. But I do think the stats back up and him being on the ball field, he helps that baseball team so much. So he's going to be my unsung guy.
Yeah, nice. I like that one. I was thinking about it earlier today, I was thinking, yeah, a good pick is also Wilmer Flores. I fell off a little bit, but hey, he was the catalyst at the beginning of the season, kind of, kept us in everything. But
Wilmer Flores, I don't think people would guess this if I said who was second on the team in RBI. You'd probably go through about six or seven guys before you got to Flores. And he had 71 RBI in almost a little bit less plate appearances than Chapman did. closer to similar amount of at-bats. But yeah, he had 71 RBIs, 16 home runs. He started off great. He just, you know, as happens sometimes, because he's got all these ailments, you know, he did fall off at the end. But
yeah, he still had some big hits. I mean, there were hits, you know, later in the season. Always gave us pro at bats too. I mean, that's the thing about Wilmer that I'm going
to. By the way, I would say I would love to see Dom Smith back, but I do wonder if he hit himself into another opportunity somewhere else to play more.
He most likely did, and it's probably a platoon role somewhere. I think the Giants, I don't know. It still is up in the air if Bryce Eldridge is going to be out of the gate, out of spring training, the Giants' first baseman to start the season. Will he need to platoon? Will he need to start in AAA and spend some time there first? It's hard to say. But yeah, I would love to see Dom Smith back. He just seems like such a leader. So Bleacher Report is reporting now that Bruce Bochy has been fired, which is impossible because he had a three-year contract. Three-year contract ended. So I looked it up, and the reports are that they are mutually splitting. They're not basically not asking him back. And he was
They have their plan, it seems like, for who his replacement is going to be.
Yeah, and they offered him a front office role. So
I wonder what that means. I wonder if Buster would be interested in bringing him on as some sort of special advisor or something.
You know, that would be interesting too. I think having Bochy as an advisor would be a fantastic idea. So if Buster wants to offer him that for, you know, $10 more a year, I bet he takes it.
All right, we're going to quickly go through our wild card round predictions. Then we'll give our overall, like, just who do we think is going to win the whole thing. So the wild card round starts tomorrow, and it's kind of nuts because they have games, at least where we are, Pacific time, games at 10, 12, 3, and 6. So you can literally sit on your couch all day watching baseball if you want.
It's a Tuesday. We have to work. What are you talking about?
I know. I'm just going to have it on in the background. And so game one. Detroit and Cleveland, you got Skubal and Gavin Williams. Even though the Guardians edged out the Tigers in the division, I think the three-game series might hurt Cleveland a little bit there. And now this is all based on if you get the true Skubal, who, you know, 2.21 ERA, just fantastic. But also was on the, you know, was there when they just went on their torrential downfall. I leaned Tigers in my series pick. The Guardians, obviously, I think they, you know, they haven't won a World Series since 1948. There are people who love seeing that team on the field and root for them to get as far as possible. But I still think the Tigers, have the edge in the three gamer. Who did you pick in this one?
I actually went with the Guardians in this one. I think the Guardians have the momentum. They just played
20 and five since September 3rd.
And they just beat them 2 out of 3, which helped them on their way to winning the division. So I definitely have to go with the Guardians on that one.
All right, the 5-seed San Diego Padres against the 4-seed Chicago Cubs. Both teams struggled late in the season. It's Pivetta against Boyd. I leaned Padres because I have this thing where I want the National League West teams to show out, because then it just means that, you know, the Giants division was a hard division, and I think it was, but I don't have any real confidence in the Padres. I mean, if you want to lean Padres,
no confidence in either of those teams.
Well, you go, okay, in a 3-game series, how important is the bullpen? The Padres have a really good bullpen. If that matters in this case, I don't know. It's an interesting series, but not one in which both teams are kind of on fire coming into the playoffs.
I had a tough time picking the Padres. I did pick the Padres. The only reason I have a tough time is because that wild card round is so difficult. You've got to win 2 out of 3 on the road. All the games are at the higher seed. stadium, and but I did go with the Padres. I think they edged them. I think they can get the key hits, as well as, like you said, I think the bullpen is kind of a little bit sturdier. Starting pitching, I think, can prevail for the Padres, so I want the Padres in that one.
All right, so then we have Boston and New York, which is where a lot of eyeballs are going to be, I'm sure. And it is one team just hits the freaking hell out of the ball and puts it over the fence. The Yankees had 272 home runs this year. They also have the best player in the entire series in Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. But Boston is probably a little bit more consistent, a little bit more of the quintessential, you know, 90 win club. The Yankees, I actually cannot tell if the Yankees are a disappointment. I can't imagine you're a disappointment, but after getting to the World Series last year, I'm sure they had bigger eyes on what they expected this season to be. And, you know, the Blue Jays came out of, not out of nowhere, but, you know, I think it was a surprise that the Blue Jays won the division. I took the Yankees, but these teams know each other so well. How does this not go like right into the end of game three?
Exactly. I went with Yankees too, just because it's in New York. You know, New York crowds are almost always give the advantage in a situation like that, a short series, Yankees at home. It was going to be tough this year without Juan Soto. Last year they were, you know, a Juan Soto, Aaron Judge team. This year it was going to be tougher without Juan Soto. They didn't do enough really offensively to add to that. But I think Jazz probably has a big series, and I think the Yankees win this one.
And then it is Cincinnati at the Dodgers. Like, it is set up for the Dodgers. This is like a layup for the Dodgers to get hot right now.
Yeah.
Though they do have to face Hunter Green in game one. And
that's the one loss I could see them getting. The one loss, but I think they win that series.
I do think the Dodgers win the series as well. We'll discuss these series as they go on, but what did you think? I'm actually going to send a link into our chat. If I remember, I'll also put it in the podcast feed. Cool. But I think, unfortunately, you kind of have to do all of the voting like now, because before tomorrow. So we're in this little fantasy baseball pick'ems thing. And I just was like, what team feels like a championship team? And you and I have been talking about this pretty much, you know, for the last few weeks, which is, it would be so much fun for us if the Brewers were able to go out and win it all. But you just don't believe it yet. Like, you don't feel, they don't feel like championship material yet. Now, some of it is probably just because that they haven't done it, at least this group. And the Phillies feel a little bit more like that because they've been successful in the past. I would think Philly would be such a favorite to win the whole thing had Zach Wheeler not gone down.
Right.
Zach Wheeler goes down, it kind of even things up a little bit. But I still feel like the Phillies feel more like a World Series kind of team than anybody else in the National League. And then on the American League, it was a toss-up to me. Like, I was like, every team is flawed. Like, there's no team where you're like, you know what? In this series against this team, they're definitely going to win. It just felt like so up and down. I just picked the Yankees to pick the Yankees. So I have Phillies and Yankees in the World Series with the Phillies eventually winning it. But I don't think there's a dominant team unless the Dodgers catch fire. And if it's the same Dodgers that we've been watching this year, it feels like they're going to get beat by one of these teams that just plays cleaner baseball.
I rolled it back to 1993. I've got Blue Jays and Phillies in the World Series, and I've got the Blue Jays winning it again over the Phillies. I just think the Blue Jays have a little something special this year. I'm not sure what it is, but it seems like, And I'm going to call it the Sky Dome because that's what it is to me. I feel like when they play at the Sky Dome, the crowd there is just nuts. The Rogers Center, whatever you want to call it. But I think the team, the crowd there is nuts. It's good. If you get the Phillies and the Blue Jays in a World Series, you're going to get two home crowds that are hungry to see a world championship. And it's going to be a fun series, but I still think the Blue Jays have a little something extra offensively, and I think they can take down the Phillies pitching. And that would be a close series, probably a 6-game series, a 4-2 win. Could go 7, but yeah, I like the Blue Jays this year.
All right, there you go. So we'll check it out as the season or as the playoffs go. I'm actually more interested in watching more this season than I've been. Like a lot of times after these crappy giant seasons, I'm just like done with baseball.
Yeah.
And also it's like when the Dodgers keep going far, I don't want to see them on my television. So
yeah, exactly.
Let's get these guys out of there so I could actually watch some of this stuff. But I wanted to make two notes that I don't know if these are official. I think these are just these guys talk to Susan Slusser. But it does sound like Ryan Christensen and Matt Williams are also not back with the Giants.
Right.
Melvin guys, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, so we didn't
mention that, but it was just because I hadn't really seen any conclusiveness about that. But I'm assuming that, you know, if Susan tweeted it, she's probably a pretty 100% with that, especially if she just talked to those guys. So that was something, you know, Matt Williams has managerial experience, but it didn't seem like he had the best 2 years as a third base coach.
No, it seemed like decision making was off just a touch. It was a little bit rough to watch some of the sends that he had. I was like, we can't have those situations. So and then it's good to have, you got to have a fresh start. So.
And then he was mad dogging us when we were on the field last year, watching him hit fungos to Matt Chapman.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Matt. I've seen your entire career. We love you, Matt.
Every picture I took, he was mad dog.
So. All right.
He didn't like the press, man.
Yeah. All right. That is it from here. Thanks for the folks who were in the chat. Appreciate you hanging out with us. I actually love the interactiveness because when you have people who comment on stuff, it just makes you think of things that you maybe weren't thinking about. So shout out to Rob. Shout out to Davis. So, all right, that is it from here. Brad's going to be off next week. It's possible that I'm going to have a Giants versus Dodgers episode with my buddy Draven and see how comfortable he is with this Dodgers team in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd love to know.
We were going to do it this week. I think he's pretty busy, so we might be able to push it to next week. But also, it's going to have to be a day in which the Dodgers don't play. So that kind of changes the schedule. If not, we'll do it after the season is over. Because I do like his insight, because if we're going to catch these dudes, we got to know these dudes, you know, as much as possible. Man. So, all right.
Absolutely.
That is it from here. We will catch you in a couple weeks. For Brad, I'm Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.